You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 4 June. We've got Fed balance sheet data due 10:30, our time tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petri Radin has Herenia Capital Advisors. Bitcoin, I mean, it is pretty much at the lows for the year. It's down almost 50% off the September highs. What's going down here? We're chatting with Isaac Odendale from Old Mutual Wealth. Artificial intelligence, capex boom, and concentration risks. And then we're going to chat with Jed Noy. He from Field Force. Who's winning payments battle in the township economy, banks or fintech? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Investors thump ABSA with astounding 43% vote against exec pay. This would have needed most of its top 10 shareholders voting against it. Business Day, SA amongst 60 countries facing new 10% or 12.5% tariffs from the US. Proposed tariff on SA subject to public hearings scheduled for July 7. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down 0.7%, NASDAQ down almost 0.33%, East is red, Sydney down 0.5%, Tokyo almost 2% lower, Hong Kong down 1.5%, and Tencent just over 2% weaker. Commodities are all red, gold futures 4,496, Brent 96.57, platinum 1,881, palladium 1,325. The rand is 16.35, Bitcoin is 64,300, and top 40 opening call, a red open, 230 points, or a little over 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radin Hayes. He, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning. Bitcoin, you and I have spoken about Bitcoin a lot, but not recently. I'm looking at the chart, peaking in, what, about September last year, almost $130,000, $125,000 per crypto coin. Now trading $64,000, chart looking ugly, almost low of the year. What's going wrong here?
Well, Bitcoin's going wrong. I'm kidding. So this is something that we have spoken about a lot.
Yes.
Over the years, we've discussed essentially what, basically exactly what I'm going to say today.
Yeah.
The four-year cycle.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? See it every time. The halving cycle. So not last year, the year before, the Bitcoin mining reward halves. That is the momentum it needs to break to new highs. Then we have the parabolic year where we go on and we make all-time record highs. We've made 130,000 last year. Then this year is the sort of, let's call it the first year of the cycle, which begins with a good, healthy 80% correction. So this is just the pattern that has been following since 2009.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So is it a forecast or a prediction of exactly what's going to happen? You know, not necessarily, but it's a pattern that has been following. So I think that the likelihood of it is like repeating itself is very, very high. And so far, it's playing according to the book. We're down 50%. We could probably dip down to 40,000. If it gets to 40,000, you know, buy with both hands. But, you know, as the pattern will say, then, you know, after that, there's the year of halving and doubling. So this year we come down, say, 80%. Next year we go 40,000, 80,000, 40,000, 80,000. That'll happen a bunch. Then on the third year, we'll break the previous high. And the fourth year, we have the parabolic shoot. And that catalyst to break the high will be, again, the mining reward halving, essentially. So I think that's basically the driver here. And also what's interesting, we saw locally the FSCA and the South African Reserve Bank come out and do a paper saying, look, stablecoins are not money. So it might not seem that important, but our government, believe it or not, is one of the global leaders in regulation around Bitcoin. We were the first country, one of the first countries to say, hey, Bitcoin might actually be a financial instrument.
Yeah,
we need
yeah.
to start licensing people to transact in it and to give advice in it. and the rest of the world kind of follows suit, right? So for us coming out and saying, look, stablecoins is not necessarily money, this could potentially have a bit of a ripple effect through the, let's call it the crypto economy or the crypto world, and I think we might see other governments follow suit, and this will put a bit of pressure on you know, the coin as well, on the crypto space as well. So I think that there's a number of things, but, you know, often what happens in the world is that fundamental reasons pop up to justify why some chart works out the way that it does. When if you looked at the chart, you'd be like, technical analysis is down.
Yeah, which it is saying. Yeah. I mean, to be clear, this chart is saying down, and I get your point. I mean, and this, what we call it 64 at the moment, lots of action happening there, but I can see that move you talk around going down to 40, and yeah, we can see that palabolic. So in short version, we've got more downside, but we'll be back at highs within 2 years and making new all-time highs. We'll leave it there. Petra Raden has Herenia Capital Advisors. Always appreciate the early morning time, and our poll today on LinkedIn, is there opportunity here? Well, maybe as Petri says, you wait another sort of third down, wait for 40 odd thousand. Have your vote, have your say. LinkedIn. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Isaac Odendoe. He's Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Isaac, appreciate the early morning time. A recent article you put out talking around a number of issues around sort of AI, the CapEx boom, the spend. You make a great point that if anything, the AI CapEx boom is actually getting narrower. It's not broadening out. We are seeing more concentration in the indices as it continues afoot from the really, really giant hyperscalers and semiconductor shares.
Yeah, so it is really the semiconductor shares that have performed phenomenally well. And you know, now you have a company like Micron, who I think most South African investors have never heard of. Yep, suddenly it's worth more than $1 trillion. And so, yeah, we've seen this divergence this year, or let's say over the last couple of months, between the semiconductor side, let's call it the hardware side, versus the software side. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing is essentially, I think, the market saying that on the software side, there's actually a risk that AI could disrupt some of these business models. Whereas in the past, of course, hardware and software kind of moved together. And the best place you can see it actually is just in the performance of emerging markets. If you look at the absolute flying stock exchanges of Taiwan and South Korea, where, of course, most of the chip manufacturing is done. I mean, it is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, South Korea in dollars more than doubled this year, to be clear, this year. And Micron, a 10-bagger in 12 months. And to your point, I had never heard of Micron until about 3 weeks ago when it broke the trillion-dollar market cap. This is not a 1990s-style bubble in the narrow sense. There is profit here. These companies are making a fortune. SK Hynix, Samsung, Micron, in their chip business, they really are printing cash. But it is cyclical, perhaps, is the important point.
Well, look, yeah. So it's definitely not a bubble in the sense or a valuation bubble, right? So because, as you say, these companies are very profitable. The bubble might be in the earnings of these companies. It might be that 2 or 3 years from now, the data center build-out slows. The demand for semiconductors either decline or just peters off, and then the prices have to come down to earth. I mean, the margins on some of these companies are phenomenal, and that just obviously is going to invite competition. And as you say, historically, semiconductors have been an extremely cyclical industry.
Yeah,
precisely because you know, this kind of demand and supply cycles are not always in whack, and then you end up with these big price cycles.
Absolutely. And what we're also seeing, and I hadn't thought around this part of it, you make a really great point around supply chain and the concentration in that. You've mentioned Taiwan, South Korea. That's where we're getting our chips from. Helium's coming out of Qatar. ASML's the only folks making those lithograph machines that everyone needs. There is a fairly significant concentration. And of course, this ultimately gets potentially political. We've seen the CHIPS Act. We've seen potential China export bans. bans. We've seen US bans on NVIDIA chips. We've seen Intel stakes. This starts to get quite geopolitical at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting if you think about it. I mean, the last 70 years, geopolitics has been driven by oil.
Mm.
I think it's safe to say that over the next decade or so, geopolitics could be driven by chips. And indeed, there's a great book by Chris Miller called Chip Wars, which kind of gets into all these details and all these countries trying to secure their own supply chains because it is a massively concentrated industry. And there are very obvious choke points in this whole supply chain.
And then to the point being is for the investors out there, diversification is always the way to sort of manage this. But that diversification perhaps in some ways becoming harder than it looks. Maybe not so much for South Africans, but I mean, if you've got you diversified away from the US, you've got a nice EM fund. And of course, that EM fund is now probably a quarter, a third, a half of it is South Korea.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of the underlying risk here is that the AI theme is driving, you know, the US market is driving the EM market, as you say. There's a big slice of it now spilling over into corporate bond markets. It's driving a lot of economic activity in the US, the data center build out. So you know, that's all good and well while it lasts, and no one knows how long it lasts. I mean, no one, you know, all of these things are still up in the air. Whether all these business models turn out to be profitable, you know, there's just too many questions around AI. But obviously, the more concentrated the whole market ecosystem becomes, as you say, the less it's more difficult to diversify yourself into areas that are not directly exposed to AI.
And if anything, this concentration, this mad rush to AI actually gets more higher risk. And I'm talking now the mega IPOs. We've got SpaceX next week. We've got Anthropic filed confidentially. SpaceX probably around $2 trillion, Anthropic around $1 trillion. OpenAI won't be far behind. That's going to be another trillion plus. We're nowhere near sort of the end days of this. This is still ratcheting up.
Yeah, no, and those IPOs, I think, will just drive further excitement, you know, potentially keep this going. I mean, if you look back historically, though, often the big blockbuster IPO has been near the top of the cycle, and I'm not suggesting that is the case now. I'm just saying that's been the case historically, because obviously that's the best time to list. The best time to list is when, you know, when investors are clamoring for your shares and they're willing to pay you know, huge amounts of money to get hold of your shares. So I think that is another thing to bear in mind. You know, that I'm not calling the top. I'm just saying this is kind of behavior that you get around closer to the top of than the bottom of the cycle. And of course, the other problem for investors is that, you know, whereas with something like NVIDIA, we've benefited, you know, as it's grown massively, with these IPOs, you know, most of the growth, or a lot of the growth, has taken place in private hands. And so we kind of, as public investors, you know, maybe we're not going to get the full benefit of that.
That's actually a great point. NVIDIA, you could have bought it when it was a 100 million market cap. It's now, you know, 5.5 trillion. These mega IPOs, you're buying at already 1 or 2 trillion. Most of that profit has gone to the private markets. But we leave it there. That's Isaac Odendaal, Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Jed Noy. He is General Manager for Growth at Field Force. This is a division of ProVantage. Jed, appreciate the time. Field Force has just done a recent research report for Field IQ. Looking at the informal sector, two things that really jumped out at me. 190 billion size economy. It is absolutely giant. You looked at almost 9,000 outlets. My first sort of broad question, what did you see that perhaps surprised or stood out for you the most?
Hey, Simon, thanks for having me on the show and for talking about the study. It's quite a big study that Field IQ did, almost 9,000 outlets. The biggest surprise for me was, I think, going into the study, we wanted to see who was winning? Was it fintech or was it the banking industry? Because as we mentioned, it's such a large part of the South Africa's revenue, and everyone's trying to get in there. So the biggest finding or surprise to me was banks own the relationship, and that's because of legacy and infrastructure, yet fintech own the transaction, which I find quite interesting. So it's not that somebody is winning. It's two kind of angles to it.
100%. It jumped out at me. Capitec, dominant. And that kind of makes sense. I mean, that is the Capitec sort of space. But in terms of point of sales, it is the fintechs that are doing the banks. And I suspect, and maybe, I mean, there certainly is a Capitec has the options, but it would suggest to me that perhaps it's the fintechs are maybe more on the ground, more sort of out there doing the legwork, whereas maybe the traditional banks less so, because certainly the fintechs are got those point of sales.
Yes, that's. I think you've hit a spot on. So the study showed that fintech has 37.5% a share of point of sale versus the banks who have got 28.4%. So it's quite a bit ahead. The reason being is twofold. I think the first one is the fintechs have taken the time to understand the needs of the trader as well as the trader's ecosystem. So now when you look at the trader, there are three main things that they need. The first one is liquidity.
Yeah.
The next one is stock on shelves. And the third one is how to manage cash flow. So we see the fintechs have created solutions, and I think it's because of the agility, where they can provide all of these from one device. So we see several of the fintechs have added as a value add service where they handle cash and do cash management, which is quite impressive. And the second part is that the whole informal sector is based on trust. And that's why I love the informal sector. It's all about trust. And it's not a spray and pray approach where you just go and drop your point of sale machine. It's basically you have to show up again and again and again to build that rapport, relationship, education. And that gives you the advocacy and gets the traders to start using the devices more and more often.
I love that because it feeds directly into the question I was going to follow up with, which is that the fintech space is doing the old-fashioned know your market. It's a point of sale, yes, but there's so much more behind that point of sale. And it's going back to, as you say, good old-fashioned relationships in many ways, which I think we kind of think fintech and we kind of think you're doing this from a fancy office somewhere, but it's still legwork.
Yes, 100%. That legwork and trust is 100% what needs to be done. One of the interesting things we found is there would be several point of sale systems in one merchant, and they would be gathering dust, and one would be clean, and they would be using that one. Mm. And that comes down to advocacy and relationship, as well as that it understands their needs and helps enable them in their ecosystem.
Yeah, and the needs are, and to your point, and you mentioned it in the report, the needs are different. It's cash flow, it's stock. It's different to the needs of a ShopRite group or something. Cash, I mean, I always talk around the idea that cash is king. Cash is still an important part of this economy, but a declining part perhaps. I mean, certainly there's a lot to be said for cash. It's trustworthy, but of course there's a cost to it. There's a risk to it as well. The crown of cash is slipping. And in fact, our governor mentioned that in a speech he gave recently.
Yes, it's very true. However, in the township economies or the informal market is, yes, the crown is slipping, but cash still is king. We've seen one out of three merchants accept digital payments at all. So it's only one out of three. Then one out of four are using the point of sale system. And that comes down to a few things. I think the first one is there's a massive circular economy. So cash will go between everyone within that ecosystem. There's a lot of trust, but again, it comes down to liquidity and getting your stock on shelf. And cash really is the king when it comes to that. So for the future, my opinion is in the and kind of long-term future is even though digital is growing and becoming a lot more relevant in this market and in this trade, a hybrid system will continue and that is the only option is a hybrid. And the people who can work out the hybrid are the people who will win.
I think you're absolutely 100% spot on, and your point around it's that sort of circular economy. The cash comes in, but then it gets used. It gets used for stock. Maybe it gets transport home or dinner or something like that. There needs to be that hybrid. We'll leave it there. That's Jed Noy. He's General Manager Growth for Fieldforce, division of ProVantage. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Chantal Marx yesterday. She, of course, F&B Wealth and Investments. Canal Plus listing on the JSE yesterday. We asked if you had any interest in this Pan-African media company. Over half said no, it is old school. Third says it depends on pricing. The rest said yes, it is looking great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchli, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. SA REIT Association, best practices.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.